is. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI, staff, volunteers, board, or management. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart in the KKFI studio with Sandy Brown from the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund. And our second segment guests are going to be introduced by Fiona and Una from the Girl Scouts, talking about STEM, a combination of STEAM and STEM. And then we have an introductory program with GLOW, Girls Leading Our World. We'll bring them in toward the end of the show and introduce them. We're going to begin mentoring them on Every Woman. And so let's start with Sandy Brown, who drove in from Lawrence today to tell us about the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund. Thank you, Sandy, for driving in, and sorry for all the miscommunications.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sharon. I appreciate it very much.
And tell us, I'm familiar with Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund for some time, but our listeners probably aren't.
Well, the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund is a nonprofit organization, and basically we work with clinics in Kansas and other states to ensure that Kansas women who need abortion services can obtain financial help. So essentially, we are the Kansas Abortion Fund. Those are some powerful words, but it's probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done. I've served as president now for about 4 years, and we work with the three different clinics in Kansas and basically help women receive abortion services when they can't pay for it.
Do you ever have to turn any women away?
It's astounding, but as long as the woman shows financial need and as long as the woman is a Kansas resident, we never say no. It's astounding that we've been able to do that, given the fact that our entire organization is volunteer run. We have just a very, very devoted group of people who are on the board of directors. And no, we've never turned anybody down.
How would they get a hold of the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund?
So if somebody has questions, basically we do have a hotline, and that number is 785-760-3959. That's 785-760-3959, and women can ask questions there. Another place to be in touch with us is through our website, which is www.secondchancefund.net.
Is second spelled out?
Yes, it is. Thank you for asking. It's Second Chance Fund, SECOND, chancefund.net.
And how many years ago was this fund formed?
It was formed in 1996 in Lawrence with a small, very small group of women. And basically they received phone calls from desperate women who were unable to have the procedure or needed to have the funding for it. Eventually we became a nonprofit. And now, essentially, I would say we're in a very, very healthy state. We are under the umbrella of the National Network of Abortion Funds. That's a national organization, and all the states underneath the National Network of Abortion Funds, each state has its own fund, and Peggy Bowman is the Kansas fund.
And Peggy Bowman was a real live person. I met her some years ago.
Oh, did you?
Yes, yes. And she was quite politically active, as I recall. And so I'm presuming that this fund started by her initially?
No, actually, it was not started by her. Peggy came on board. She worked for Dr. Tiller, who was assassinated in Wichita in 2009. Peggy came on board about 8 years after the fund was started, and became such a resounding voice and became such a confidant of Dr. Tiller's that the name changed eventually to the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund. And unfortunately, I don't know if you know Sharon, she passed away last year.
Yes, I did know that. Yeah. And, she did a lot of work and kept that going. A lot of dedicated people. One of my favorite people, Jean Rosenthal, is also on your board.
She is.
And
she gives her best, by the way.
Yeah. And also, her partner, Dave Kingsley, was a recent guest on the show.
Oh, was he?
I mean, the pair of them are unreplaceable. Irreplaceable, I would say.
They're both irreplaceable.
Yes, yes, unreplaceable. So, how many abortions on an annual basis, or do you have a count? How many abortions have you provided?
We do. And, of course, it will vary. This year, we've probably at about 280 for the year. So really, since our inception, since we began, it's now over 3,000 abortions that we've helped with. So one thing that's interesting is that the women will go to the clinic, and then it's the clinic that will determine if she is in financial need, and if she's that Kansas resident, then the clinic reaches out to us.
Ah.
So, and it's a very nice symbiotic relationship. They will reach out to us, and then we hear just a little bit about their story, and then we will then make the pledge and pay the clinics directly. So
so they're all kind of pre-qualified when they get to you. You don't have to figure that
exactly
out.
We don't do the vetting. We prefer to just keep things extremely simple for us. We receive the thank you notes, though, from the women. And, you know, some of them are fairly amazing. And given the fact that 1 in 3 women up to the age of 45, 1 in 3 will have an abortion in the United States. That's quite a statistic. So, you know, here in this room, for example, there are, 10 of us, or, you know, a number of us. And, you know,
if we asked the question, if someone would raise their hand, probably 3 of us would raise their hand.
Right, exactly. And, but the clinics basically, you know, handle all of those logistics, and we receive the wonderful thank you notes, because essentially we'll receive a note not just from a single mom or a single young woman. We'll receive a note from the farmer's wife who has 3 or 4 kids, and you know what? She got pregnant, she's in her late 30s, and they can't afford the abortion. Last week we helped a 14-year-old girl. She was raped by her uncle. Every woman has their story, and it's astounding that, you know, they're so forthright in their thank yous, and really basically it gives women that second chance because they want to go back to nursing school. They want to fulfill their dreams. Having a family is not the right thing for them at this particular moment. And with that, you know, the Second Chance Fund, we're here to help Kansas women gain control over their reproductive health care and to give them a second chance.
It is unbelievable, the stories you must hear. I mean, I can't even imagine a 14-year-old being raped by an uncle. And I'm hoping that he got what he should have gotten. And, wow. And then you talk about a woman 39 years old, and I'm thinking that the chances of having a baby that might have serious health problems at an age like that increases too, which would also add an additional burden.
Absolutely, Sharon. What happens is that many cases, for example, a month ago we helped a woman who had a fetal anomaly. So the problem with this is that fetal anomalies are not diagnosed until well into the pregnancy. And so if a woman discovers that her baby will either die in the womb or has no chance of living. For example, there's, you know, a spinal cord isn't attached. There's some massive fetal anomaly. We are able to help them out too. The cost goes up significantly. And in a later term abortion, especially for these fetal anomalies, it's just a sad situation that women have to make this choice. But they do indeed make the choice. And they have to go to the Boulder Abortion Clinic or to Albuquerque for their later term abortion. And as long as that woman needs finances and as long as she's a Kansas resident, no matter even if she has to go out of state, we will still pay.
So Dr. Tiller's office used to provide those late-term abortions.
Yes.
And has been unable to since 2009, since he was assassinated?
That's right.
Okay,
in Kansas,
not sure.
Yeah, that's correct. Mm-hmm. There is not a physician in Kansas who provides that service. Here in Kansas, an abortion can be performed up until 20 weeks and 6 days. After that, it's illegal. And sometimes these women are under the gun to make it happen legally.
Our guest is Sandy Brown, director of the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund, operating out of Lawrence, Kansas, statewide for Kansas women. And website, we'll give that again before we close. I was just curious, what does a regular abortion cost on average?
Good point. A regular first trimester abortion, if there are no extenuating circumstances, such as an Rh blood factor, is about $650. And whether it's the surgical abortion or the pill, they both cost the same. And many times women will have part of that money, but if you work a minimum wage job, it's indeed very difficult to have that type of that extra money to pay for such a procedure. And that's when we do come into play.
On average, do you have an average amount you give for each woman?
We do. We give about $200 to $300, although there are certain situations that extenuating circumstances where we have a supplemental fund where we'll give more. We err on the side of generosity. But
if someone wanted to learn more about you, how would they do that? And if they wanted to contribute, I suppose if they learn more about you, there would be a way there for them to contribute.
Absolutely. We are 100% funded by donations. 100%, and we are volunteer, all volunteer driven. If somebody wants to give, or if they want to learn about us, please go to our website. We are really, truly one of a kind here in Kansas. We are at www.secondchancefund.net, and second is spelled out. www.secondchancefund.net, and the number is 785-760-3959. See our website, learn about us, you can donate, one can volunteer, and we enjoy meeting men and women, other people who certainly are pro-choice and don't know where they can put their efforts into this. How can they do that? Sometimes we don't have a place for somebody to volunteer. But one of the best things that can be done is a $10 donation. You know, whatever someone is able to give. And certainly it's beyond gratitude, just very appreciated. Appreciative.
You know, the word, you know, choice, that's... for me, of course, I had a hysterectomy at age 34, never going to worry about having to get pregnant or having another child. But there was a time shortly after that that had I been pregnant, I certainly, if I'd not had the hysterectomy, would have sought an abortion. Have abortions gone up, down, or is there a statistic saying has the need gone up? I've heard that teen pregnancies are lower.
That's correct. And I'm sorry, I don't have that statistic, but in the last few years, indeed, the number of abortions have gone down, but still they're...
And that would be because they were able to get birth control?
Yes.
And, of course, you know, there are factions that would like to take birth control away
from
women.
Exactly. And, you know, which is beyond our comprehension that some, you know, that here, you know, we would have birth control questioned or that made more difficult for women in the same sense. One cannot expect for insurance or Medicaid to pay for an abortion.
Right, that's another issue.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
May I?
Yeah.
I was just curious if you think that the increasing availability of the morning after pill has helped reduce the number of abortions.
Absolutely, it has. That now can be obtained in a grocery store, in a pharmacy. It's about $50. That certainly it has been helpful. You know, many times in my own town, I've made sure that is out so women can see it because there's a stigma attached to that. People are shy. Women are shy sometimes to ask for, especially, you know, if a woman is scared to ask and be proactive and have the self-advocacy to ask for that. So in Lawrence, I've made sure that many of those groceries, Walgreens, et cetera, that they're displaying that.
I know when I lived in England that the morning after pill was free, as was birth control.
Free?
Oh my.
Free?
Free. Most of the prescriptions on the NHS, I was having to pay like £6.50 for, but birth control and the morning after pill were free.
What a novel idea.
But you actually had to have a doctor prescribe the birth control pill, the morning after pill at the time, which meant if something happened on a Friday night, it may be too late by the time you could see someone on Monday.
Exactly. And there are people who have fought for those freedoms. And unfortunately, I hope that we do not have the right to have, you know, I hope that birth control becomes easier to obtain. I sense that it won't, but it's something that should be.
I read recently about a college in California that's actually making the morning after pill available through vending machines on their college campus. And so it won't stigmatize people, so they won't just be seen going there for that. They've added other things in, like condoms and sanitary pads and things that people might need.
Exactly.
And most of the shops are shut.
Very interesting. You know, I'd like to think that would happen in the state of Kansas, the morning after pill or birth control, you know, easily available and free. But, you know, I'm a very positive person, and I think that at least if we can tell people that, you know what, in the state of Kansas, we will make this happen for you. If you are in trouble in the state of Kansas, if you are underage, we will get a judge to help that process along for you, and we will make that happen. So, again, www.secondchancefund.net.
Which, you know, back to the word choice and the pro-life, I think the Second Chance Fund is a very pro-life fund because it's pro-life of the woman and why we've let the right steal that pro-life. It's like women's lives don't matter to these people.
Right.
And I'm going to get started on ranting about the beliefs that some people hold that make women second-class citizens or less than and not deserving a second chance. But thank you, Sandy Brown, for driving in from Lawrence.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sharon.
Sharing this because it's very informative and very worthwhile. And I've actually learned a lot.
Thank you so much for having me, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Now we have some messages.
We do indeed.
Thank you. Support for KKFI is provided by the Charlotte Street Foundation, celebrating its 20th anniversary with a one-night-only live music performance, Time's Not Listening, at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, September 30th at the Folly Theater. Five player composers will provide a variety of musical experiences from Andean to trance. Support for the project, part of the Every Street is Charlotte Street series, is provided by the Metzler Copaykin Initiative at the Folly Theater. More information and tickets are available at charlottestreet.org.
Award-winning journalist, author, and Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez is coming to KC for a KKFI benefit on Friday, September 29th at All Souls Unitarian Church, 4501 Walnut, Kansas City, Missouri. Meet and greet VIP dinner at 6 p.m. with talk from Sanctuary Cities to Climate Change at 7:30. $75 meet and greet VIP dinner tickets include an autographed copy of his new book, Reclaiming Gotham. Tickets for the talk only are $20 at $10 for students and unemployed. Tickets available at kkfi.org.
Hello and welcome back to Every Woman. This is Una Nowling here to introduce the next segment of our program. And I came across this, a very interesting program in our city here as I was sitting at my desk minding my own business one day. And a co-worker and friend of mine, Darcy Bloss, came by my office and said, "We are looking for engineers that have a strong interest in art and have an interest in teaching how art and engineering have sort of an intersectionality or connection between them to groups of young women." And she introduced me to what I think is a really interesting program called Engineering Off the Canvas that is being held at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art here on October 13th. And we have three guests in our studio here today to talk about this program and tell us what it's all about and what it's trying to accomplish. We have Linda Nickel, who is the manager of studio workshops at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. We have Darcy Bloss, who is the Black and Beach Women's Network Outreach Chair, and another Black and Beach employee who works with me, Meredith Phelan, an event planning consultant. I'd like to welcome all of you here to the studio today on Every Woman.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks, Una.
I guess the first thing I'd like to ask is, you know, this is a fascinating sounding program. Could somebody give us just a little bit of an overview of the program and what the goals are and what it's all about, really?
Well, one thing I'm kind of thinking of is just to define STEM to STEAM, because that's a term that we hear a lot in education now. And this is a program, Engineering Off the Canvas is a program that really puts a face on that, because STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And when you add the arts to it, it becomes STEAM. And so with this collaboration with Black and Beach, we're kind of showing the ways that a lot of our art objects, sculptures in the galleries and the museum, have a direct connection and just walk hand in hand with engineering and science and a lot of those core subjects.
And Meredith and I both work at Black and Beach, an engineering firm, and it's interesting because we both have artistic backgrounds. I have a journalism major, and as we were starting to work with the Girl Scouts, we wanted to provide some kind of programming and interaction for them that saw that space that Meredith and I really live, this intersection of art and engineering. And as we started talking, there was Susan Stanley, who's another Black and Beach employee, had this idea, like, what if we collaborated and got together and kind of did some programming that offered a chance for Girl Scouts to kind of see what that kind of thing would look like.
Yeah, I have a graphic design background, actually, and if you had told me when I walked out of school as a graphic designer that I would be working for an engineering firm, I would have laughed at you. So when Darcy approached me about a year ago, I had come off of doing some Girl Scout programming. I did a camp for my former service unit and was very excited about the opportunities that were there, and Darcy came to me and said, "Hey, you know, I need a Girl Scout. I need a former Girl Scout to come and, you know, help us get this off the ground," and I just kind of got wrapped up in the whirlwind, and we are now going from STEM to STEAM, and it's incredibly exciting to see the evolution of this and see how this has grown. And we're sold out, correct, Lynn?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we had 85 slots, and we were sold out
very
quickly.
Well, we've got quite a few on a waiting list, too.
Yeah, so it's incredibly exciting for me to see young women who are so excited about, you know, the connection between science, technology, engineering, art, and math.
I know that the UMKC Women's Center has actually been involved in promoting STEAM, and that was the first time I heard of it because I know the director of the center. I'd never actually heard of people deliberately encouraging art to link into science, technology, engineering, and maths before. But then recently I also saw something that they're trying to get doctors to be trained better in observation by making them take an art course and try and notice all the facts in the painting to help them actually make all their full observations before they make a diagnosis and jump down a conclusion and shut things off and miss things. So it's amazing to hear that you're on board with this and helping bring that forward, and that people don't have to be all science and technology and cut off part of themselves.
Now, at first I thought this was a national program or whatever. This is entirely locally produced, isn't it?
This is, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes. In February of this year, the Black and Beach had partnered with the Girl Scouts and did like a half-day experience for the Girl Scouts to be exposed to some of the aspects of engineering and those kinds of things. And that just generated a lot of conversation and talking, and just we saw a lot of just excitement. You know, we were sold out and booked. You know, we had just like at capacity in every room. And around that same time, Susan Stanley said, hey, what if we did this kind of partnership, but we added in an art collaborator? And we reached out to Linda, and that's how then she came to that event, and we started to brainstorm how we could connect and collaborate. And as we started to dive into where those synergies existed, we started to see that there were so many places that these things need to work hand in hand, that when you started to get into some of the restoration processes, just how do you hang a 1,000-pound sculpture, or how do you make these things happen? There was just so many kinds of places, and we just found so much excitement from diving into that.
Well, we kind of started out too with overly exuberant with, so we had page after page of ideas, and then it was like, okay, we've got to kind of focus here. There may be other opportunities for this to happen again, but this time we kind of focused on looking at some of our sculptures in the galleries, and the kids, I've gotten two of our conservationists, Paul Benson and Mary Schaefer, to come in, and they're going to do a little brief, we're going to break into stations. So it's a 10-2 event, and we will start off with all the girls together. They will break into different groups and go to different stations, and a couple of those will be with the conservationists, and they're going to talk about science and how that is applied to a lot of the art that we have and some of the conservation techniques that they use. We have a short tour for them that we're going to couple some of our art teachers with engineers from Black and Beach to approach that piece of sculpture from the art aspect, and then approach it from how engineering and technology and everything was connected with either installation or the creation of it.
And I'm very proud to be one of those engineers that's volunteering for this event. Yay. I've always had a very strong interest in art and was an art history student after I finished my engineering degrees. And so I've also, the Nelson is one of my favorite places to go. When I was single, I would spend a lot of time wandering around there, or just coming in on rainy days and just soaking in a few pieces and really trying to study them and think about them from both the, as you said, the artistic and the engineering aspect. And it is always stunning just how you hang safely and without disrupting them or having them fall apart in your pieces some of these very large old artworks. I know you have some that are thousands of years old. Yes. That are very massive, made out of basalt or other materials in your Egyptian wing, and I'm still wondering how you actually are hanging it on the wall in some cases.
Oh, I think for a lot of them, if they could, some of our curators and conservationists, I know they have stories to tell about some of those items.
We actually saw reproduction bronze doors hung, and that's a new exhibit and just being added recently.
Yes, those are beautiful.
And that was impressive because they told us about how much they weighed and why they'd had to position them there.
They ended up having to attach those to the elevator shaft and then putting something under it to make it look like it's sitting on a floor, but it was just too heavy.
Yes.
To go on the floor.
Yes. I understand you have, I think, 70... Girl Scouts joining you for this event?
We're up to 85 right now.
Up to 85, wow. I read on the web that you just said here a few minutes ago you're actually already sold out.
We are, and I think next week what I'm going to do is send out an email to everyone, and just to make sure if anyone is last minute thinking that they can't attend, because this is a free event, and there might be some people that have changed their mind or can't come, then I'm going to open that up to the people on the wait list.
So this was directed primarily at Girl Scout troops, I think.
Yes.
It said cadets through about, 10th grade, I think it was.
That sounds about right, yes.
Yeah. 6th through 10th grade.
Yeah.
So are there any plans to have this event open, I guess, to other groups besides the Girl Scouts? Because it sounds like it's been really popular and it hasn't even started yet.
Right now, I mean, at least within the school workshop program that I manage, there are some elements of the STEM to STEAM that's offered for schools to take. We have automaton sculptures. We have scribble bots. We have light painting. So there's that option. But then we just kind of need to see how this goes, troubleshoot, and see how we move from here.
Now, I also understand that you're going to be having some hands-on activities for the young ladies there as well.
Yeah, we do have a wind turbine sculpture. So we're looking at something that we're going to have kind of challenges to where the girls can use a lot of found objects and create a piece of sculpture that is hopefully aesthetically pleasing as well as can capture the wind, and then we'll have some hair dryers and things for them to see how well their creation works.
And in each of the rooms, there'll be a Black and Beach engineer there using the same materials that the girls are using, the Girl Scouts, and so it'll be interesting to see what inspires an engineer and what inspires the mm-hmm. girls now after they've been learning all these different kinds of aspects and learning, you know, all these things. Another aspect of this program is that Beth Nyback, who's a sculptor here in town who sculpts in metal, is going to share some of her creations and, you know, what it's been like for her to create. You know, there's a lot of public art that she's created, a lot of very large installations installed with cranes kind of sculptures, and so I think it'll be exciting for the Girl Scouts to get to see what's possible in those ways.
I think that's very important to have that direct connection to an artist there who is actually going through this process and so forth. And I do know there is a large amount of engineering that goes into the artworks. I know you've sent me a file that talks of the tours and what sort of artworks, the sculptures, and in a couple cases, paintings that people are going to be seeing. Are there any that you could describe for us as an example?
We have one piece that it's a maker space chair jigsaw prototype, and it's created from a 3D printer. Each individual piece was created and fit together. So what we're going to do is have a station set up next to that, and we do have a 3D printer, and one of my coworkers, Brent, is going to be there showing the different pieces and so they can see a 3D printer in action. So we have little miniature pieces that it's going to be printing. He's going to be printing to show them.
I've seen a photo of the makerspace chair, and it looks almost like an M.C. Escher artwork with the repeating pattern in it. It made me almost think of Birds in Flight, I guess, the shape of the pieces and everything. I know you're going to have some of the tours go out onto the grounds outside of the museum. Are there any pieces that you're going to highlight out there in particular?
I'm hoping the weather, I hope we don't have a downpour on that day, but one piece in particular, and there's more than one of these, is the shuttlecocks, because that was we have some sketches that I'm going to print out of diagrams of the artist, looking at how they are going to make these pieces work, and then working with engineers as far as balance and the artistic elements, as well as how these pieces are going to work and stand up to the weather elements and be on the lawn. So that's one highlight. We also have, I'm trying to think what else, I think we're going to look at the fountain in Noguchi Court, because it's kind of an inside-outside piece. The glass wall almost provides part of the artistic experience within that. I'm going to think, what else was I doing on the tours?
There was the big planes. There's a couple of different things. I think that's what's great is you begin to see that there's so many different places where if we didn't have that marriage of art and engineering, we didn't have those kinds of things, we wouldn't have these beautiful exhibits in these places. And, you know, I know Meredith as a Girl Scout, you and I had talked a lot about, like, we weren't exposed to this kind of programming as a kid, you know, didn't have anything.
I didn't hear about STEM until I was in college. Probably, I would say it was probably 2010 before I even had heard of STEM as being something that was encouraged of girls, and that was the first time I'd ever heard a name put to it, is to encourage girls to get into science and technology. And really, I hadn't heard much about STEAM until I got involved in the Girl Scout activity last year. So it's been incredibly exciting for me to add. You always think as the artist, okay, well, where's the art in this? Because there really is a lot, as an artist and as a graphic designer, there really is a lot of overlap between science and technology. Take the visual spectrum, for example. I have to be able to do some very minor math and being able to lay out layouts on a grid. If I'm working on a piece, I have to be able to lay it out on a grid, and there's a certain amount of math that's involved in that. So being able to encourage girls who maybe don't feel that math or science or technology is their strength, make them realize that there are places that they can go and there are things that they can do that, you know, that involve that. They really can follow their dreams. They really don't have to look at their careers in such a black and white kind of...
Well, and I'm kind of thinking of that, you know, even in the education field, you go to your science class, you go to your math class, you go to, oh, we're going to go to my art class. It's kind of a push to just make sure all of those are combined and intertwined. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a new concept, but when you think back to the Renaissance with Leonardo da Vinci, he was doing that. Mm-hmm. He was totally combining those. And you can look at his journals and... just all of his thoughts about different things with art, science, technology, all of that was connected.
Mm-hmm. He was an incredible artist, but he was also, some people forget, an inventor.
Yeah.
You know, and you can look at his sketches, and there has to be a certain amount of knowledge that he had. And at the time, there was not probably a lot of enlightenment around those kind of things that Leonardo da Vinci was creating at the time. So it's just interesting how all of that is interconnected, and it's so exciting that now we've got STEAM in that space as well.
I think that's one thing that's always it's one thing that's, I guess, depressed me a little bit about the engineering world is that it seems like there is so much opportunity for engineers to really include much more art in the design without sacrificing safety, without sacrificing purpose, and without sacrificing cost. You see it at one of the things I really love doing is going to very old power stations. I've been to about 3/4 of all the power plants in the U.S., and you see the ones that were built during the Great Depression, ones that were funded by New Deal money and so forth, but under the Roosevelt administration. And they have these wonderful Art Deco murals, sometimes carved into the lintels over the doors, sometimes painted on the walls. I swear that it looked like one power station had a Diego Garcia mural on it. Wow. It wasn't by him, but it was that same sort of style. And one had something that looked like Thomas Hart Benton showing, you know, the construction of the power station, all these allegorical themes of it, and bringing electricity to the, you know, to the wilderness, essentially.
And the Hoover Dam is absolutely beautiful. It's got sculptures outside, and it's got inside, and all these wonderful artworks, mosaics on the floor, and the way it's laid out, it's just so beautiful in there, and it's functional.
Even some of the old power stations out in South Carolina I went to that have wonderful polished brass fittings. They look very steampunkish and so forth. So I'm really hoping that the scouts can get a feel that, especially nowadays, more than ever, we need to have some sort of soul brought into engineering. I imagine that's what's motivating you in this, creating this wonderful effort.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think this program, more so than others, really explores the space of unity, the space of inclusion that we can all come from, that is, that it's all our own uniquenesses that when they meld and come together, there's something even more powerful that emerges. You know, we don't just work in vacuums. We don't just work in our own little silos. We need to have that diversity of strength that comes when you have a lot of different kinds of mindsets and ideas. And, you know, sometimes Meredith and I, we work really closely together at Black and Veatch, you know, and have that more creative aspects to ourselves that sometimes, you know, something to us that just seems so kind of ordinary, and maybe to an engineer who's very much, you know, on that other side of things is like, that's so creative and so out there. What are you talking about? And their eyes kind of go crossword, and we just sort of go like, that's just an every, like, that's just what came out of my mouth on a Tuesday morning, you know, like, that's just so basic in some ways, but
wait till Friday.
But yeah, exactly. And it's this fun thing that I think as we, but then I also see the other side of things as they start to just, engineering terms start to become into part of my language and vocabulary, that I see what happens when we start to allow those kinds of things that you think about as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, that really it's a circle and they intersect so much.
I mean, certainly I'm excited about imbuing the girls with the sense that art and science and technology and math are complementary to one another. They're really not opposite ends of the same spectrum. They're very much complementary. You know, certainly we need technical folks to keep our lights on, but, you know, at the same time, like Una was mentioning, you know, there is a certain amount of artistry that kind of has to go into that. You know, you have to have a little bit of creativity to look at things differently.
Well, it's a part of problem solving, too,
yes,
I think.
Yes, absolutely. Certainly. Being able to look at things differently and being innovative. You know, we live in a very fast-paced world, and we always have to be innovative, and we always have to be thinking about where is the next thing, you know. And if you've seen, you know, if you've seen photographs of solar fields, you know, there's a certain artistry to the way that even solar panels are laid out. You know, you see a huge field of solar panels, depending on where the light hits it, you know, it can create different effects, but the engineers also have to think about where the light is going to be, how it's going to be hitting those panels, you know, where are they going to get their peak, where are they going to get their peak energy from? And there's certainly a complementary aspect to this whole STEAM initiative that we've got going on.
I think that when you are able to incorporate art into an engineering design, when you're able to do that little bit above and beyond what you need to satisfy the base requirements of the project, what you're actually putting into the design is pride. You're showing pride in the work that you've done. You're showing pride in work that, well, to be commercial about it, your company does. And I think that, I hope that the girls that take part in this event are going to hopefully pick up on some of that aspect of art. To me, is about pride. It's about pride in yourself, in a culture, in a people, in your nation, in some part. There is a pride imbued within it, I think.
Beautifully said. I agree.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I think one of the funnest parts of creating this program that, you know, has been kind of unique in that sense has been just the excitement and the fun that we've had just, you know, starting to develop what the program looked like and what kind of activities we'll be doing, that I just remember just walking out, just floating on air, because it just was this, like, tangible feeling of, like, we're creating something that, you know, we hadn't been a part of, and it just is exciting to add this element of, you know, being empowering and inspiring for the girls Scouts and just taking all the best of these so many worlds and putting it into one pot together.
I agree. It's been very exciting. So I'm looking forward to October 13th.
And I'm really looking forward to being there to help out. Linda, Darcy, and Meredith, we'd like to thank you all very much for coming here and telling us about this exciting program. And if the program goes on and evolves from this or continues to develop, we'd like to have you come back and talk about it a bit more in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for
having
us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And now Sharon's going to be introducing Girls Glow, Girls Leading the World, or Leading Our World, I should say. And we have some wonderful young women in the studio with us today, and the person that leads and organizes them. And I'm very, very happy to have Sharon here to introduce them.
Well, we have, I don't know how many of them have joined us, but they range in ages from 12 to 17 years old. And did you take a count? How many girls are there here?
Seven.
Seven?
Seven.
Seven. Well, we have other people in the studio, so it looks like many more than that. And their illustrious leader is Annie Walsh, who I found out, yes, and she's, oh my God, she's going to be very instrumental because she has experience. She used to produce new letters on the air, and that is very, she was going into such detail that I'm just blown away, so I'm so glad that she'll be helping us with this. Annie, do you want to tell how you got involved in this, and then we'll hear from the girls?
Sure. Sure. Thank you so much for that introduction, and thank you so much for having us here today. I got involved with Girls Leading Our World about 4 years ago when I was on the board of Kansas City Women in Film and Television, and we secured a grant from the Missouri Arts Council to make a short documentary about GLOW, and so that's just called GLOW. And I came to that because of Cynthia Sadler, who's one of the program's co-founders. I'm just a volunteer, but I'm happy to be affiliated with the group in any way. And it's been a real gift to be part of this program and watch the girls learn and grow so much over these past 4 years.
And so what we're hoping to do here on Every Woman is mentor and help them learn a bit about what's it like to produce a radio show. Maybe they'd like to learn hands-on engineering, what Fiona's doing now on the board over there. In fact, we hope they will. There's podcasting of radio shows. There's how to conduct an interview, who would make a good interview, just things like that that we'll be exploring. And would any of you like to step up here and say something about why you want to be here today and why you want to participate in this program?
I would love to participate in this program just because I love TV broadcasts and TV.
And you are actually at your school. You're involved in TV broadcast.
Yes,
and
yes.
Where do you go to school?
Priscilla Academy.
And your name is?
Renee Wade.
Renee Wade. And then sitting at the next mic?
Aisha Reach.
And why do you want to learn about radio?
I think it's interesting just to know about everything before, like, I branch off into college and decide what I want to do with my life. So I think I want to know all my options before I go into the real world.
And I hope you guys were listening to the STEAM interview knowing that girls can do math. You know that. You know girls can do math. When I went to school, they said girls can't do math. Girls aren't good at math.
I'm pretty good.
But we're changing that. That's changing. And it's an idea that's planted in our heads, I think. We can do anything we want to do, that we set our minds to do. Would anybody else like to step up here? There's some people in the background there that seem to be rather reticent to speak. How about you? Did I ask your name?
Yes.
Everybody's name.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Tell your name and why you want to be involved.
My name is Krishana, and the reason why I want to be involved is because when I heard you say something about the math part, about girls wasn't able to do math, at the end of the day, we're no different from boys. Like, we might think different from boys, but we're still no different. We're able to actually do the same thing as boys because we think like them and like other stuff, I don't know.
Well, I think until we're in about the sixth grade, we do better in school than the boys do, too. And then at some point, we've been taught, I don't know if it still works like this. You guys tell me if I'm wrong. But at some point, it's like, well, we're supposed to let the boys win. Boys rule and girls just kind of, you know.
No.
Thankfully, it's not.
That's changing? That's
yes.
Changing?
Yes.
Well, see, that's why we want to have you on the air, to talk about what's it like. When I was a girl, it was different than what it's like now to be a girl. Yes?
Yeah.
Good. So anybody else want to add something to this conversation back there? I'm like, you guys are going to have to get up in front of the microphone sooner or later.
I'll fill in while someone's standing up and coming up.
Okay, you fill in. You got a question?
When I was a girl, I didn't mind being a girl, but I minded being treated like a girl. Mm-hmm. They always treated you like you didn't have any opinion and you shouldn't speak. It was a seen and not heard thing. And they always expected you to take second place to the boys. So I didn't really mind being a girl, but I minded very much being treated like a girl. Have you had any experiences like that, or is it better?
personally, and I was just talking to Miss Annie about this earlier, how, like, now I don't think we have, like, a lot of struggles with that now, because there are so many women, like, that did go through that, like, just, like, defending us now. So we don't have to, like, if a boy says something like, you can't do that, you're a girl, like, a lot of times, like, that idea is just shut down, because yes, you can. And I don't even have the thought in my mind that I can't do something because I'm a girl. Like, everyone I know, like, we've just been raised now that we don't even think about not being able to be something because we're females. It's just automatic that if I want to be a surgeon, then I can go into that. Like, I don't even have that problem. And maybe that's just me, but I know a lot of my friends don't really think like that either.
I know when I was at school, I went to an all-girls school, and I know there were a lot of studies around that say that girls tended to do better in school if they were in all-girls schools, and boys tend to do better in schools if they're in mixed and co-ed schools. And the idea was that girls had been taught they should take second place to the boys, and the boys were doing better because they were showing off. Mm-hmm. And the idea that people should be taught just to be seen and not heard, and that they've got to be demure and not speak up, is just absolutely awful.
Mm. I've never heard of that. That's something right there for them to say that about. Girls can only be on top when they go to an all-girls school.
Yeah, I mean, the words that I would want to use to describe that we can't use on the air.
Well, it's interesting that the common denominator in improvement and learning seems to be girls' presence in the classroom.
Yeah, so, right.
I think that's what's exciting about these kinds of opportunities, and that's really what GLOW is about, is just getting more women in the room in any given profession, because the more diverse voices that we have, the richer the conversation is. We have more perspectives, and just as you were saying earlier, you know, these girls may have stories to tell that we don't know about, and it will only, you know, improve our community the more we're able to listen to those voices. So
I read something recently about a woman doctor, and she was talking about events that had happened when she was doing her student training. And she and three other student doctors were doing rounds with one of the lead doctors, and he introduced the male student doctors to the patient and didn't introduce her. And the patient assumed that she was just a nurse and asked her to empty his bedpan or whatever, because she wasn't introduced as being a doctor and was female. So they just thought, oh, she must be a nurse.
Yes.
So having people in the room is good, but you have to have someone willing to actually fight and demonstrate that they're in the room rather than just making assumptions.
Yeah. Absolutely right. And that was something we were talking about earlier when we were just kind of brainstorming. If you could make any kind of radio show that you would like to do, you know, what would that be? What would that look like? And a lot of it has to do with not taking things for granted and not making assumptions. We are so grateful that that girls, you know, may not feel limited in some of the ways that they have in the past, and we don't want to see any of that progress erode. And so for us, it's really important that multiple generations also kind of come together so that we can share those experiences and those stories and know, hey, we've got your back. So if you want to go for this dream, just know you have a whole team there behind you, ready to help you make that happen.
That's what it feels like a lot these days.
That's one of the things that we enjoy doing here at KKFI, is having marginalized groups, whether it is based on gender, based on race, based on sexuality, what have you, come here into the studio, because being a community radio station, we are all about serving the parts of the community that don't normally have a voice, or whose voices are silenced because they're not considered to be popular enough. They're not considered to be important enough. You can't get commercial sponsors to pay for them like you would need if it was a television show. We can speak the truth here and be free to speak the truth because we are working for the community, and that's why we love having programs like this to work with us so that we can teach and we can share and we can help give people a louder voice, or give them a voice if they thought they never had one in the first place.
Yes, and then you can become part of the station and pass that on to other people and pass your enthusiasm and your ideas and your wants and needs on to people. And I think that would be wonderful.
And as Una said earlier in the green room, this is an opportunity to learn a skill that's marketable, and you can go out and get a job, or you can work at your college studio. Oh, colleges have radio stations oftentimes, and you will be prepared, and you can volunteer and have a show on your college community or college radio station. So there's a lot of opportunity here, and we are excited to work with the girls in GLOW. And this is a kind of a new program for us, and we'll figure it out as we go along, and we'll want input from you about what you would want from us, what suggestions you have, how we could make this better and make this work more for you. And anybody have anything else they'd like to add?
I will say one of the girls is wearing a T-shirt that says, "I can't even adult today." And it's an awesome T-shirt, but it's somewhat depressing that it is an awesome T-shirt.
Well, do we have any final messages that we need to get out? Is it time for us? It is time for us to close.
3:54. So we need to perhaps start thinking about closing and reminding people what our upcoming shows are that are after this. I know we have Donna Wolf coming straight on after us. And then I believe we have Donna
Wolf. Guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson?
Yes. He follows us straight on.
And I'm kind of interested in seeing if Donna and Ebony on Urban Connection will be wanting to participate in this program, too, with the girls from GLOW. I think that's a wonderful name. And I also think Cynthia Sadler is just amazing when I've talked with her. I don't know what you guys think about her. But she's pretty amazing. So we're thankful that Cynthia has arranged this, and we will talk about how we're going to proceed with this program.
And next week on our show, we have Jennifer, who is one of the co-founders of KC WIT, which is Kansas City Women in Technology, coming to talk to us about getting more people into engineering, technology, and science. So it follows on nicely from this week's themes.
Awesome. And so we'll go out now with our theme song. Do we have Amy Carroll Webb up?
We do indeed.
"I Come From Women." This is quite a rousing song.
So thank you everyone for being here, and we'll talk to you next week.